part of our Science to Health series, Lynn Sorensen, BSN and RN, with a distinguished career in hospitals, clinics, public health, home health, group health. She's most recently been involved with the University of Washington Teaching Hospital and clinics before her retirement. And she and KPTZ V-Team colleague Kate Keenan join us alternately each week for conversations and updates. And this week is no exception. So let's see if we have Lynn Sorensen on the line. Are you there, Lynn?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good. Good connection. All right. Well, there's lots to talk about. There was the weekly meeting yesterday, covering a lot of territory. We can talk a little bit about the big picture nationally, but then we want to get into what's happening locally. It's all related. But, you know, that whole idea of things that are actually coming to a head now, you know, public health versus economic health. And are they really at odds with one another? And the whole idea that low-risk activities are much easier to fall back on than just letting people give free rein to the lack of social distancing and all the rest of that, and then trying to get them to get back into the habits that they've already established. What's your feeling about that, Lynn?
Well, I got to say that the meeting yesterday with Tom Locke, he spent about an hour talking about the governor's phases and whether or not we should go ahead as Jefferson County is one of the 10 counties in the state that could apply for a variance and move ahead in the phases. But, you know, just an arbitrary loosening of the mitigation practices, I mean, they could stimulate a second wave that's worse than the first as far as the coronavirus. And there's going to be a lot of people involved in this decision, even though it is the health officer who can initiate the process. It goes through a number of steps. And all the way back to the state to say, okay, it looks good, you can go ahead with this or that. But as far as public health versus economic health, it's a tough one, and they are at odds with each other in a way, but, I mean, we're all people on this planet, and, you know, it's a choice of health versus all the financial obligations that one has. You know, health does come first. It's our biggest treasure, really, personally. But the data should be informing these decisions, and I think that's one of Tom Locke's messages, that so much is reliant on the science and going slowly, and we don't have to do all the to reach phase two, we can pick and choose what we want to do.
Well, that was
like I said, it's going to take. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, sorry, I was going to say that's an important point about the data, because that's what should be informing our decisions. And then, what's our position now these days in being able to gather data?
Well, I still think we're having trouble getting all the testing that we need, and the governor did speak to the ability for Washington State to test 22,000, get 22,000 tests going in a day. But when you look over the list of the labs that do it, I mean, it's all over the state, and that's if they're running at their full capacity. And I know that Tom Locke also mentioned that maybe Jefferson Healthcare will have its own ability to run the test, which I'm not sure where that stands at the moment, but that would certainly save a lot of time and get the turnaround to get results back, you know, maybe within 24-hour period.
Go ahead. Well, I was going to say it takes a range of supplies in order to make testing, in order to complement the ability to do testing. And how do we stand here in the county with everything that we need in order to move forward with that?
Yeah, good question. I don't know if there's still a problem of getting the 2-cent Dacron swabs that are needed to take a sample, or then there was a problem with actually having the reagent or the chemical, the transport chemical that it has to go into the lab. It's just unbelievable that we're having to hold up so much of this because of the lack of these supplies. And, you know, why, you know, I don't understand why it's not here. And, you know, are there political reasons why it's not here? One could go down that rabbit hole, but I don't necessarily want to. But we have to be prepared to do testing and have the people that can do it and have the case management capability, the trained staff, et cetera. If we move into phase two, it's going to require a lot more coordination. Say if certain businesses are open, they need the training, they need the PPE, they need surveillance that they're doing it right. The health officer, like I said, does initiate this application, but it goes through a number of steps. There's a board of health that will convene to make, again, the decision, and that's a seven-member team. It has the three county commissioners on it and one city council person, one person from the hospital, and then two citizens at large. And so if they go through the agreement or the discussion as to what the waiver variance should look like, then it goes to the actual back to the board of commissioners, county commissioners, and they just do a thumbs up or a thumbs down on that. But if they do a thumbs up, then it goes to the Department of Health, and they, again, check, well, does this county have the capability to do the management and move ahead to phase two? So those are the steps to go through. But then you have to consider, well, the location of Jefferson County and the attractive nature of our county. People love to come here. And we're very close to the largest metropolitan area in the state.
Yeah, I think
we're talking people from coming.
Yeah, we're talking what, like maybe four million people in that metropolitan area.
Yeah, they'd all love to come here for the weekend, I'm sure.
Well, that brings me to wanting to talk a bit about that quarantine fatigue, and what that means in terms of a risk of a second wave down the line, but. How far along are we understanding the symptomatic and asymptomatic transmission? How are we going to be able to detect that to make some of our decisions viable?
I don't know. It's you know, they have loosened up the criteria for getting tested, so maybe more people are being tested. But the fact that we haven't had a positive test in 25 days now, 26 days, it makes us feel like, oh, well, maybe it's not here. But then you have the asymptomatic person that could easily be spreading it just as well.
Yeah, and I think
there's never going to be an answer for that one, I don't think.
No, except that maybe being able to zero things down through testing and tracking, right?
Yeah. You have to have the setup for the actual contact tracing, and Tom Locke was saying that they've had, you know, time to get their staff trained, but they're going to have the proper PPE, the signage, and all the logistics that need to be set in place. And Jefferson County, yes, we could be the state leaders to venture into businesses opening, but it's not a simple matter, and
well, especially
still a lot of things to be answered.
Right, especially with the potential for traffic coming in from
what's our authority? I remember Kate Dean was asking that question, one of our county commissioners, and you know, what's enforceable?
I think you're there. You are. Are you?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. You had a little bit of feedback going on there. Yeah, and I think that's really. Let's talk about the business community. How are they feeling about opening up or not opening up, and what seems to be the the prevalent opinion about that, whether opening up too soon is just going to be like sort of shooting yourself in the foot, especially if you're risking having to close back up again.
Yeah. Kate Dean did make a comment that over the weekend she'd heard from a number of business owners that they're not ready to open up. It does have to start sometime. But are there enough guidelines developed? You know, how far apart are chairs? Will there be barriers between tables? How are they going to enforce the numbers of people that are allowed at a table? I think they said something like 5 could be there. But then, who determines really what is 5 safer than 10 or 6? It's a bit of arbitrary choice. And who's going to track it? Who's going to sign off on the fact that the restaurants are set? And it's just, there's no controlled experiments. Other states that have opened up, Texas and Georgia, I don't know if, since there's no control group, how they're going to compare, well, they did it this way, and then the control group did it this way, and it was much better. So it's, we have the potential of drawing people from other areas, and how can we say, oh, only county residents can go to the hair salon or get their nails done? You know, who's in charge? So I think it's huge, and I'm not a business owner, so I can see that they'd want to be getting their businesses started again, but there's a lot that goes along with that.
Well, I guess the big picture here is the whole idea of unintended impact. So,
yes.
If you give incentives for people to travel out here from the I-5 corridor, then that's not going to do any good, because it just, people naturally, you and I and everybody else, naturally want to be able to go someplace where you can kind of spread your wings a little bit. And if Port Townsend is the only game on the water, then that might be a problem,
The only restaurants that are open, or, only bar, that I don't know, they didn't mention bars being open, but still. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to go out for dinner.
And there's also the
consideration. You drive all the way to Port Townsend for
it. Right, and there's also the considerations of, what overnight accommodations are available, camping as an incentive for folks to come to the area. Is a travel ban enforcement something that's actually workable? There's lots of things to think about out here in the county, because, as you said, we've knocked things down pretty well. I think the flu has kind of disappeared, dropped off entirely, right?
Yes, it did.
Yeah. So no new cases in 25 days. That's good for us. And I think that we're just sort of in the crosshairs. So something for us to think about.
Yeah, and the fact that there's less than 900 tests have been done, and I'm not quite sure of the population of the county, but I think it's just under 50,000. Or I know that was one of the criteria for a county to be considered to be able to apply for a waiver. So when you compare under 900 to, say, 50,000, I mean, the potential is still there, and I know that there's still coronavirus circulating, but it is unusual, and maybe we're just that good at doing all the mitigation steps of wearing masks and hand washing and social distancing, and that's very good.
Well, those of you that are, but those of you that are listening that may have just tuned in, we're listening to Lynn Sorensen, RN/BSN, with a distinguished career in hospitals and clinics and public health, home health and group health. And we only have a minute or two left, and I ran across this article the other day about dogs, actually. There are 8 Labrador Retrievers that are being trained by some researchers at the University of Pennsylvania to sniff out the virus, to sniff out COVID-19. and they're attempting to teach eight of these dogs to detect the pandemic, which could help quickly screen large numbers of people in public places. So that was kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah, good. Well, you know, it might be a bit of impact on civil rights if a dog comes up and says, yeah, you're it, and they take you in for testing. But, I mean, I know that dogs have phenomenal noses, and I'd like to see how this goes into play.
I know. I'm looking at a Labrador here with a great nose in the picture on the article here. Well, it'll be interesting.
I think we're going to need more than Labradors to help us out of this coronavirus.
True enough. I think
problem.
Everything helps if it works. So, well, Lynn Sorensen, thank you for checking in with us. And
thanks, Chris.
We will talk with you in a couple of weeks. And Kate Keenan will be in next week. And take care, be safe, and thanks for checking in.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.